Welcome to Canadian Politique. I'm Cameron Bishop.
I'm Leanne Goodman.
I'm Mike McDougall.
Today on the show, we're talking the announcement by Kinder Morgan that all unessential construction on the Trans Mountain pipeline will cease. We're going to discuss the ass-backwards handling of the expulsion of Russian diplomats from Canada. And finally, FBI raids and fires south of the border. Also, I'm very excited to announce that Indigenous Services Minister Dr. Jane Philpott will be a guest on the pod in the coming weeks. Confirmed that with her office, her director of communications last week. So it's looking like we're going to record with her on April the 25th. I'm pretty excited, guys, because Jane Philpott is a rock star in my book. She's awesome. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, very excited. Most competent minister, in my view, in that government. And I wish they'd make her deputy prime minister or finance minister, but she is a rock star. So really excited to have her on. That's for you, Minister Philpott. That is how excited I am to have you on the show. All right, so let's talk about Trans Mountain. So on Sunday evening, as we all know, just as everybody was mourning the tragic deaths of 15 individuals from the Humboldt Broncos killed in that awful bus crash in Saskatchewan, Kinder Morgan decided that it was an opportune time to announce that it was putting a hold on all non-essential construction on the Trans Mountain pipeline and imposing a May 31st deadline for the federal and respective provincial governments, BC and Alberta, to give an indication on whether or not the pipeline would move forward. In response, John Horgan, the BC government, underscored its position that we'll take any and all steps, regardless of the fact that this is within the jurisdiction and priority list of the federal government to protect its coastline and environment. Alberta Premier Rachel Notley responded by announcing that they are exploring a financial stake in the pipeline itself, which was shortly echoed by the federal Liberal government. And in what was described as a frank conversation between Premier Notley and Premier Horgan, Premier Notley indicated that there was an intention to move forward on tightening the screws on BC, which legislatively could and would include slowing the flow of oil to BC, which, of course, would have the net result of drastically increasing gas prices. Notley is also calling in the feds to exert economic and fiscal pressure on BC to assert federal jurisdiction either legislatively or through the courts. And lastly, to allay investor uncertainty by anteing up federal capital in the pipeline. That is, much like Alberta is considering becoming a controlling investor or taking other similar measures to underscore its commitment to getting the pipeline built. So let's just hear a little bit before we talk about it from the Premier of Alberta, Rachel Notley, in her news conference last week. Go.
If we have to, Alberta is prepared to do whatever it takes to get this pipeline built, including taking a public position in the pipeline. Put another way, Alberta is prepared to be an investor in the pipeline. And let me be clear, if we take that step, we will be a significantly more determined investor than BC has dealt with up to this point. Never count Alberta out. This pipeline will be built. In essence, what has to happen is BC needs to understand that this is a federal decision taken by a federal government that has the jurisdiction to take that decision. While they have every right to work to find the best practices around protecting the coastline and preserving the environmental safety around the pipeline construction, it all needs to be subsequent to the fundamental action of building the pipeline. And so that's where there's a lot of game playing still going on, and that's where we need greater clarity.
We just spoke with Jim Carr, and he said that now is not the time to be making threats to BC about his own government when I asked him whether or not they were prepared to withhold funding, for example, from BC. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, I think there's different views on that matter. I think that at the end of the day, if this pipeline does not go through, at least 40,000 people in BC will, on a given year when things are going well, actually earn their income mostly in the oil sands and the oil industry in Alberta, and then go back to BC and live in communities, mostly in the interior, and pay their taxes and contribute to the health of the BC economy. So in my view, short-term pain should not necessarily be seen as a threat. It might instead be seen as a picture of what is to come, should we not understand the overall economic value of this project.
So that's Premier Notley. And I like to call this, at least I'm calling it myself, Thunderdome, BC versus Alberta. One province goes in, one comes out. My money's on Rachel. What do you think?
You know, it's interesting that both provinces seem to be doubling down on the rhetoric on this to a point where how does one get out of it now without losing a tremendous amount of face? I mean, clearly Alberta is dead serious about getting this pipeline built, and BC, you know, is also dead serious about, you know, their environmental, you know, looking at their own environment. And when you escalate to this point, how do you get out of it without one government not surviving it? Is what I'm basically, that's my point I'm trying to make.
You know, I'm of two minds on this. I certainly understand, and it makes for a wimpy argument. I certainly understand the need to get the oil to the market. And I know that some First Nations have signed on to this, but there's 600 First Nations, and a lot of them haven't. And I
but
don't
not
know
all 600
how...
First Nations have to sign
no,
on.
I know,
it doesn't go through their territory.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that we can expect there are First Nations whose territory it does go through who are vehemently opposed. And I don't know, that never gets mentioned. And to me, that should be number one consideration. There's been no country in the world that has been able to figure out how you balance economic interests with respect for Aboriginal territory. So I don't know what you do. I don't know how you get around it. The BC Premier is obviously going on one side of the argument, and that, you know, the First Nations that are affected by it or have played a big role in the opposition to it. And Notley doesn't even mention them, which I find slightly offensive in an era when we're trying to we're trying to achieve reconciliation. And, you know, there are lots of jobs dependent on this pipeline, but they aren't the only jobs that are going to be affected by this pipeline. What about the tourism industries that will be affected by this pipeline going through pristine wilderness? You know, like oil and gas jobs aren't the only important jobs. Having said that, I understand the argument on the other side. So I'm really of two minds on this one. I can't say anything that's in any way intelligent.
Abacus Data had a poll that came out polling BC residents about the Kinder Morgan project, and it kind of raises questions for me about who exactly, aside from three members of the Green Party who are propping up a fragile NDP government in BC, actually oppose this project. Support for the project, if you add support and lean support, was 45%, neutral was 20%, and lean oppose or oppose was a total of 35%. John Horgan also lost the popular vote and lost the election in terms of the original seat counts to the BC Liberal Party. Is this, I think it is, I think, I mean, I know where I stand on it. I think this is a cheap ploy for somebody like Andrew Weaver to continue to keep the government in power, because I'm not too sure the BC government could survive a campaign where their gas prices are already high. In BC, I think the last time I checked, they were $1.55. And if Notley turns off the taps or slows the taps down and those go up over $2 or whatever, that's going to pinch the government big time. And not to mention, that's just on the residential side. Businesses in BC depend on gas and oil and gas from Alberta flowing west. And I think, as I've said before on this pod, that Notley should squeeze his balls like a vice, man. Just make that province hurt, because we have gotten our ass kicked in Alberta. I guess I'm no longer we. I grew up in Fort McMurray, but I have a soft spot for Alberta for obvious reasons, because I'm an oil sands kid. And they put me through school and put food on our table. And when I see a premier who is trying to recover from a recession in that province that was no fault of her own, I want to make sure that we give her all the help possible, unless, of course, that is, we don't want to give her any help and we want some dinosaur like Jason Kenney to run the province in a year and a half. Because that's what's going to happen.
What if you were a First Nations kid who grew up on one of the territories where that pipeline is going to go through? What if you were a tourism operator kid? Like, why? You know what I mean? Like, it's not just one sector's jobs that are affected by this pipeline. So why... are they paramount? It's what I don't understand. However, I don't know what the solution is. I don't know how you solve the problem. I don't know how you get around, how you find a resolution to the problem.
I know a lot of people that are from British Columbia or live there, and it is the culture in British Columbia. The environment is important, and it's an outdoors province. And I don't think that there's any real issue with people saying, hey, let's do some environmental scans here just to see what kind of damage this pipeline could cause. And I think that one of the paramount issues here is the stakes in the sand that provincial government and the federal government are taking on this. No one's really going to come out. I mean, someone's going to lose. And this is where, you know, I feel like in our governance, we can be a little bit more savvy, perhaps, because when this ends, it's not going to end well for someone.
Adam Sterling was on Twitter the other day. I don't know if anybody follows him. He has a show. It's the Adam Sterling Show on CFAX 1070 in Victoria. And he made some points last night on Twitter that I thought were worth putting into the argument. And he says, it's true that a number of nations, First Nations, also oppose the project. I won't insult them or you by trying to suggest there is unanimity. That would be wrong for all sorts of reasons. I knew there was at least one Indigenous nation on Vancouver Island who supported the project, but to be honest, I didn't know there were nine of them. I never would have known if I didn't rigorously fact-check all the spin and viral groups are dishing out. Then he says, imagine what it feels like to be one of the many Indigenous nations who exercise their autonomy to choose to support the project, only to be hectored by privileged activists telling you that Indigenous peoples, in brackets he writes, you, oppose this and you have no voice. That feels wrong to me. If we can take the time to acknowledge the individual traditional territories upon which public events here take place, and we do, how on earth can we fail to acknowledge their autonomy in the debate over this pipeline? Can somebody explain that to me? Really good question.
But you can make that argument both ways. So then why do the ones, what is the argument then? Then the ones that are opposed to it should be silenced because there's some that are proponents of it? Like, you can make that argument both ways.
Sure. But
either way.
But what outnumbers which?
Somebody, well, I it doesn't matter.
But I mean, I think the issue too is that this is also, it's lose-lose. I think, Mike, you were saying that earlier.
Yes.
Realistically, let's be clear. The people who oppose pipelines in this country will oppose pipelines in this country ad nauseum forever, period. That's the way it is. They can bitch and moan about Kinder Morgan all they want. They could bitch and moan about Keystone. I, by the way, oppose the Keystone pipeline. So I like to say that, you know, I'm open-minded.
Why
enough.
Did you oppose that one?
Well,
why did you oppose that one?
Frankly speaking,
when most of it was already there.
Well, most of it was already there, but I also didn't like the fact that we were getting the nub end of the stick in terms of jobs. Most of those jobs were going to the United States. Thanks very much, but
that's true.
No thanks.
Yeah.
This is a different situation. We have a province that is literally reeling from a recession even now. We have thousands of people in Fort McMurray that need to have their lives rebuilt, that have suffered from fires, the downturn in the economy out there. This is a pipeline that acts as a lifeline. But to be fair, I think it is true that it's lose-lose. If the pipeline goes through, then there's going to be pissed off people on one side. If it doesn't, pissed off people on the other. But let's not kid ourselves. I would say, and it's obviously I'm grasping in terms of numbers, but I would bet you that 99% of the people who oppose the pipeline would oppose any friggin' pipeline, period. If it ran through an industrial area of town covered in cement that was impermeable or whatever, they would still oppose the pipeline. This is not, you know, it's intellectually dishonest for people to say that they oppose this pipeline. They oppose all pipelines.
Well, they view pipelines as a symbol. This is the case with Keystone, which I covered ad nauseum for years in Washington to the point where I wanted to blow my brains out. They view pipelines as a symbol of fossil fuels, right?
Right.
Which is kind of stupid because, okay, you don't take it in a pipeline. You're going to put it in a train or a truck. Is that better? No.
No.
But it's become this flashpoint. The pipeline is a symbol of oil and gas. And so they are going to oppose them no matter where they are, no matter where they're going. You're right.
But here's the thing, and I know it's very simplistic, but I'm just going to toss it out there. I think it was the infrastructure minister, Sohi, said to Kennedy Stewart on Twitter when he was taking a victory lap because Kinder Morgan begged off or decided that they were going to halt non-essential spending. Kennedy Stewart, the NDP member of parliament, who was arrested recently at a protest about that very pipeline along with Elizabeth May, takes a victory lap, and the federal infrastructure minister says to him, "Yeah, that's great. Glad you're taking a victory lap." I'm paraphrasing, of course. "Hope that you're doing that the next time you're flying between Ottawa and BC, courtesy of the good people of Alberta who have, you know, basically had the boots put to them. But their oil and gas is good enough to get you to and from to do your job." And that's the thing. All of these environmental activists, you know, unless we can figure out a way to turn, you know, shit into gas, we need to be able to dig up or access oil. That's the reality. And I think anybody that says otherwise, there are ways to mitigate the effects. And I think that the Notley carbon plan the climate change plan is one that builds on pipelines as well as environmental policies and carbon taxation for a better Alberta and a better Canada. But we are not going to be able to silo it into one or the other. And I think it has to be taken together. And these individuals who are opposing the pipelines, they don't want a pipeline. They don't want oil, you know, but I'm sure they all are driving around. They're all filling up with gas. They're all getting on planes to go to their protests. Fuck them. I'm sorry. It really pisses me off.
Alrighty.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, you know, it just really pisses me off because it's such a facile argument to say, well, you know, this is all about big oil and big this. Okay, yeah, okay, go and tell that to the moms and dads in Fort McMurray who either have lost their homes or their jobs, or the people in Newfoundland or BC or Saskatchewan who are out of work and have been out of work because of the downturn in the economy. You know, it's fine and well to climb on a plane and hold up a placard. It's quite another to get your ass on in a heavy hauler or out to one of the oil sands plants and actually, you know, drive the economy. Bitching and moaning doesn't drive the economy. Although, just a shout out to sponsors, this podcast is all about bitching and moaning. So if you want to toss some money our way, we would happily take it. But it just makes me angry.
But to me, as a country, once again, we are so slow to react on what was happening 10 years, what other people were seeing was starting to happen 10 years ago. Why haven't we invested more heavily under the Harper government? That's when it should have started in renewables and alternate sources of energy that could employ those people. You are seeing that happen in Alberta now.
Sure.
And in Newfoundland.
Yep.
But we were so slow, once again, to fucking see what was coming right at us. Other countries had it figured out, not us.
But Leanne, I'm not
Harper put all his eggs in the oil and gas basket. Our currency became a petro currency under Harper. It was stupid, and now we're paying the price. And you're right, people are losing jobs, but a lot of other countries saw this coming and started to invest more wisely in other sources of energy.
I know,
not Canada.
I'm not negating that we need to diversify our economy at all, but I think it's a really simplistic argument to basically suggest you can only do one. The same people bitching and moaning right now about a pipeline to through BC will, you know, as an aside, say, well, why don't you build a refinery in Alberta or something? Well,
which they could have done 10 years ago.
Sure, which they could have done 10 years ago. But let's be clear. The same people bitching and moaning about a pipeline right now would also oppose the very refinery that they're suggesting that they would rather see built. It's going to be the same thing with this band of morons. They're always going to say the exact same thing. Diversify the economy? Absolutely. But, you know, let's not forget that everything has to feed into each other. We need renewables. We need oil and gas. We need all of these things playing together. We need more wind energy. We need all of those things. But to deny a province the right when it's a federal jurisdiction to move their product to Tidewater so that it can be shipped overseas and that they can see some economic benefit, it is not the place of any one province. And I really worry about what this says for the future of the country if one province can hold up a project that will have significant impacts on the economy.
Well, it's already happened. Quebec did it with Energy East, right? It's already happened.
Yeah. Denis Coderre in Montreal.
Yeah.
But this also could be this is going to be a hot button election topic too when the federal election comes next year, because Trudeau needs to figure this out. If Alberta starts putting sanctions effectively on BC and cutting off their oil and gas flowing into BC and gas prices in BC go over $2, we have a major problem in this country if that happens. I mean, you can't have, I mean, this is basically, I mean, it's like a trade civil war, which we don't want to have in Canada. Like, come on.
Yeah, internal trade wars are always the worst. very damaging to the country.
Can we at least agree? I know we're all over on different pages here today, but can we at least agree that shut the hell up, Andrew Scheer? He tweets out today. He says, and remember, Andrew Scheer.
Oh, Joe Oliver, too. Joe Oliver tweeting out today about how, this is all the Liberals' fault because the Keystone Pipeline was such a raving success for you guys.
Yeah. Anyway, how many, I'm curious, Andrew Scheer and the Conservative caucus, could you enlighten us all on how many pipelines got to Tidewater in the 10 years of the Harper government? And he says, this is from Andrew Scheer this morning, it's not surprising the guy who thinks budgets balance themselves also thinks pipelines will build themselves. Justin Trudeau has claimed to support Trans Mountain, but we've yet to see any action. Will he answer this simple question? When will the pipeline be built? excuse me, former failed waiter Andrew Scheer, where is my omelet? And also, I'm sorry, like, I don't take anything that the Cabbage Patch doll says seriously, you know, the short sleeve patch.
What about
shirt.
Grandpa Joe Oliver?
Oh, man.
And Grandpa Joe Oliver, who I watched fall asleep at so many events over the years. Always falling asleep.
You know,
hey, Gramps, where was your pipeline? How did Keystone work out for you?
Yeah, nothing worked out in 10 years of Harper. It just everybody got more embittered, and maybe that's why we're at where we are right now. So we can all blame this on Stephen Harper. That's, I think, how we should leave this episode.
All right.
I will just leave you with one quote that Rachel Notley said because I love it. She says in her press conference, maybe the government of BC feels they can mess with Texas, and who knows, maybe they can. But let me be absolutely clear, they cannot mess with Alberta. You called last week Catherine McKenna a boss. Rachel Notley is a boss. She is 4'11" and kicks more ass than anybody I know. Love my premier. Absolutely love her. Special place in my heart.
I would put money on Texas if there was ever a Texas-Alberta Civil War. We have different... When I saw that quote, my
gun
first
laws.
Thought was, fire the intern that wrote that quote, because that's the stupidest thing I've ever read in my life. But I digress. We have different opinions.
All right, let's talk about the expulsion of Russian diplomats. So last week on the pod, we discussed how Canada had expelled 4 Russian diplomats from our country in response to the poisoning of Sergei Skripal, an ex-Russian spy in Salisbury, UK. In response to Canada's expulsion of Russian diplomats, Russia did the same thing by booting out 4 Canadian diplomats. So following that expulsion, there was an interview last week with the defense minister on CBC, Harjit Sajjan, and he suggested that Russia interfered in the 2015 Canadian election. Well, fast forward to this week on CTV's Question Period with Evan Solomon, Liberal MP Ruby Sahota, who was on a panel with Conservative Deputy Leader Lisa Raitt and Matthew Dubé, the NDP public safety critic. Sahota steps in it big time. She contradicts the Prime Minister on the reason for the expulsion, saying it only really was about the poisoning of this former Russian spy, and then proceeded to absolutely implode when pressed by Evan Solomon, who rightly, I think, pushed her on the fact that the government had said that part of the reason for the expulsion was because of Russian interference in 2015. Here's the clip.
Multiple ways in which Russia uses cyber, social media, propaganda to sway public opinion, to try and push a pro-Russia narrative.
Finally, some details. The Prime Minister accused Russia of trying to discredit the Foreign Affairs Minister, Chrystia Freeland, which is one of the reasons why Canada booted out those 4 Russian diplomats last week. I want to start with Ruby Sahota. Can the government be more specific as to these very serious allegations, how Russia tried to undermine Canadian democracy? Can you give us more details on that?
When the Prime Minister made his statement the other day, that was in addition to the issue that we're already facing. I mean, what we've been talking about is the expulsion of the Russian diplomats from not just Canada, but from the UK for the issue that happened. The nerve agent that was spread in the UK is the reason behind the expulsions.
Well, to be fair, Lisa Raitt, the government actually, and Chrystia Freeland said, it wasn't just the poisoning of the double agent that they attribute to Russia. They said very clearly and very specifically that these Russian diplomats were both undermining our democracy and imperiling our security. Now, we don't know any more details. Yeah. My question to you is, should we know more?
Yeah, I think we should. Quite frankly, Evan, when we take a look what's going on south of the border, there's a very large discussion going on around whether or not there is interference by the Russians in the U.S. democratic process. It's being taken very seriously. Here in Canada, we have an expulsion of four Russian diplomats, a very serious thing to do. And the Prime Minister coming out and saying it's because somebody said something negative about our foreign minister. Look, if that were the case, nobody would be sitting in the House of Commons if saying something bad about somebody else caused you to be expelled, quite frankly. So we need to have more granularity, Evan. We need to understand. Canadian public deserves to understand what's at issue here and what's at risk. Are we at risk?
So that's the first clip, if I'm not mistaken, AJP. But so let's just talk about this. We talked last week, I think Lisa Raitt underscored what I said, which was they're having a full-scale debate in the United States. Well, not really a debate. They're having full-scale investigations into Russian interference in the U.S. election. We have the very nervous last week sounding defense minister who filled with ums and ahs, and we called it British porn. We heard him trying to assert on the one hand that Russia had been somehow involved in our democracy, but then wouldn't give us any examples whatsoever. Then this week we have this liberal MP saying, no, that's not the case. It's actually just about the spy, which contradicts the news release from the Minister of Foreign Affairs when the Russian spies were expelled. What the hell is going on? And
Trudeau, she contradicted Trudeau as well.
Yeah. Let's just hear the rest of that answer before we talk about it.
I think down the road, Evan, we will be seeing more details because the Minister of Democratic Institutions has taken this issue on front and center in her portfolio to make sure that our democratic institution, our elections in Canada, are well protected. We had a report that came out from the commissioner last year. There is a lot of work to be done, and we do know that there are some threats. But when it comes to this issue, I mean, the decision was based off of the incident in the UK, which was heinous. And we all know the facts and the issue that took place there. Whether these people were involved in other things in addition to that incident that took place, you know, there are other
your
things
government
that our national
said
security
that. No,
will
but,
know
to
and
be
have
fair,
information too.
But no, your government has said they were involved.
But that's
in other
not
things.
The reason. So I know that it may build like an interesting news headline, but that's not the reason.
Sorry, with all due respect, your government gave that. No, sorry, I have to stop you. Your government gave that as the reason. You're now saying it was an act of solidarity with the UK, which we know. But your government gave the reason that they were undermining.
Yeah. So. Ruby Sahota, who the hell? First of all, Ruby Sahota is not even a parliamentary secretary. Like, was she the only Liberal MP available for a media interview at all? She sounds completely unprepared. She doesn't know what the hell she's talking about. And if anything, she's given the government a huge headache. But what else is new? This government seems to be shitting the bed left and right, and nobody's changing the sheets.
Under the Harper government, when we had people from the Harper government, say minister or whatever, come in, they provided us with a massive list of restrictions on what we could say to them publicly, who was going to be present, how many video cameras were going to be there, how many recording devices. They kept their message very tightly controlled. And it was very clear that if you were going to have a member of, you know, the Harper government trademark come in to a public setting, that the message was controlled. And with this government, it's almost like all they need to do is make an email list to their ministers saying like, hey guys, this is our position on this, and send out a daily communication. And it's, I don't think they have that. Like, do they even have a press office in this government that,
yes,
you know, releases talking points?
They do. I mean, when I worked on the Hill, like under Martin and Kretsche, there is coordination in terms of messaging and talking points and all that kind of stuff. I mean, coordination, but I have no idea who the hell decided that Ruby Sahota would be a great spokesperson for the government on this. It's not like she didn't even read the news release that was issued, which says, frankly, this paragraph says, from Freeland's news release, when she expelled the four Russian diplomats, we are expelling four members of Russia's diplomatic staff serving either at the embassy of the Russian Federation in Canada or the consulate general of the Russian Federation in Montreal. The four have been identified as intelligence officers or individuals who have used their diplomatic status to undermine Canada's security or interfere in our democracy. And then she goes on to say, we are taking these measures in solidarity with the United Kingdom. These measures are not aimed at the Russian people with whom Canada has long and fruitful ties, yada, yada, yada. But still, the fact remains, the government, the Minister of Foreign Affairs highlighted that they interfered in the in our democracy. So what the hell is going on? And it can't just be because they took a pot shot or two at Chrystia Freeland.
Okay, number one. I really would like Evan Solomon to stop yelling at people. I don't like that. Number two, having said that, however, she did look like an idiot. She was not briefed properly, or you know that she and her staff probably caught a lot of heat. She just, it seemed like she went out and winged it, and I don't understand, because look, these people got Justin Trudeau elected. They ran an amazing campaign. They were disciplined, and now it's like the discipline has gone out the window. Like, they're just not, I don't understand why the messaging is always off. And
it's like,
you know,
the Keystone Cops, but they were more organized.
It's weird, but also in the grand scheme of things, I don't know how many actual everyday Canadians really care about whether it was all those reasons or one of those reasons. The point is, we kick them out, right? Like, this is kind of stuff that is interesting to people, losers like us, but I don't know. To me, it seems a bit like a tempest in a teapot. Like, the point is, we got rid of them. They're out. They were
bad. But the story's not.
We know they were up to a lot of shit. But does it really matter whether it was one reason or several reasons? I'm sure it was a number of reasons, and they're out.
Mike, what were you saying?
I was going to say, the story at this point, though, like, the story last week was kicking out the diplomats. The story this week isn't. We all know that Russia's going to rush, right? Like, that's just what they do. The story is that the government of Canada doesn't know, like, the tail's wagging the dog, and we don't. Like, we're a world power. Like, we have to be able to have a consistent message when we present to anybody.
Yeah.
That's the story. The story at this point is, you know, again, with the amateur hour on how we handle anything.
I will say that I pointed out on Twitter, and I will reinforce it now, Ruby Sahota, hope you enjoyed your audition for cabinet, and hope you enjoy sitting on the back bench for a very long time, because that was a terrible, terrible interview, and you've caused more headaches. And in another clip, we don't have
it. I bet that woman is in cabinet in a year.
I bet you she isn't.
I'll take your bet on that.
All right.
Is the bar that low? Is that what you're saying?
If the bar is that low, well, if she's in cabinet in a year, that means she'd only have 3 months, because judging by where this government is going, they're going into the ditch
of
opposition.
Within the year.
I bet you she isn't.
Okay,
everybody's heard it on here. I will give Leanne, what, 20 bucks?
Yeah,
$20.
I'll referee.
And if Ruby Sahota sees the inside of the cabinet room as a Privy Council member with the honorable in front of her name and a department or agency that she helms, I will give Leanne $20 and full bragging rights. But I think I'm on the side of, well, reality. Sorry, Leanne, but there's no way. Ruby Sahota, thanks for playing. We have some lovely parting gifts for you. Remember to spay and neuter your pets. Okay, next is south of the border, because we can't have a week where we talk about any other fucking thing in the world except what's going on at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. So, Trump fixer Michael Cohen's office, residence, and hotel room were raided on Monday night by FBI agents who seized documents related to a $130,000 payout he made to adult film actress Stormy Daniels, also known as Stephanie Clifford, just before the 2016 presidential elections. Other items seized during the raid included personal emails, tax documents, and business records. A person with knowledge of the investigation told the New York Times. Also this past weekend, a fire at Trump Tower, where there were no sprinkler systems installed on residential floors in the 58-story buildings, in accordance with the law, a law that was on the books in 1983. In fact, in the 1990s, Trump actually lobbied against changing any requirements that he had to install sprinklers in older buildings such as his because of the cost. The fire claimed the life of 67-year-old Trump Tower resident Todd Brasner. Trump, as is his custom, has thus far, of course, failed to acknowledge the death of Brasner, but rather he tweeted that, quote, "Fire at Trump Tower is out. Very confined, well-built building. Firemen and women did a great job. Thank you." So which one do we want to tackle first, the fire or Cohen? Because I actually kind of wonder if they're not related.
The sprinklers is just vintage Trump, right? He doesn't give a shit about people. All he cares about is cutting corners and saving as much money. It's not even worth fucking, pardon my language, mentioning. But this raid of the lawyer's office is a really big deal.
Yes.
And I think it's going to be the beginning of the end, because they're going to get tax evasion information from this raid. They're going to get embezzlement. They're going to get money laundering. And honestly, maybe he won't be impeached, but I'll bet he's not around 2020. I'll bet he quits when he sees that they're coming for him.
Well, unless he fires Robert Mueller. I mean, he has to fire Sessions, Rosenstein, and somebody else. Although Mueller was the special counsel was very smart, because he referred the raid or the terms of the raid to the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, who was a Trump appointee or who is a Trump appointee, and a judge actually signed off on the allowance for the raid. So the fact that someone high up in the Justice Department agreed that less intrusive methods like cooperation or a subpoena weren't enough, that almost certainly means that they've all concluded that destruction of evidence or noncompliance were a serious risk. So I think you're right, Leanne. I don't know, though, if we'll be rid of him. I think this guy's like a 5-alarm shit stain. You're not going to be able to scrape it off. You can't even use bleach to get it out.
I don't think he'll allow himself to be impeached. I think he will quit, saying this has been a terrible witch hunt, the worst witch hunt in the history of the United States, and I've done everything I can possibly do for you people. I'm out. I think that's what's going to happen. Because, you know, there's reports that the Warren is seeking evidence of bank fraud, campaign finance violations, embezzlement, money laundering. Like, it could all be there, right? This guy has been one of Trump's henchmen for years. Once again, though, it's pretty hilarious that it's Stormy Daniels that's bringing him down.
Well, you called it last week. You said that you know, you thought that the Stormy thing would be what brought him down. I think it's hilarious. I mean, the Trump Tower fire is more just, it's interesting because it's a metaphor of the entire presidency, right? Like, there's fires going on. There's, you know, they don't have sprinkler system trying to, you know, it's a metaphor for the presidency. But this actual raid on the office is super interesting because, you know, I forget who I saw tweeted, an FBI agent tweeted that, you know, in his 20-year career, he's seen maybe 5 or 6 raids on lawyers' offices, because they're very rare when this happens. But he said in 100% of the cases, the lawyer ended up going to jail, because when you do a raid on a lawyer's office, it's, you have to be really sure that there's something going on, right? Because of the blowback from raiding an actual lawyer is so big that I think Mueller's really onto something here, and it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out.
All right, let's play the clip from Bill Kristol, who was on CNN last night, and what he said the raid meant. Go.
If Robert Mueller had asked the Southern District of New York not to do this now, they would have held off. I mean, he has sort of precedence here. So I'm a little doubtful that this is not either part of his investigation or in accord with his wishes. I mean, this is a huge escalation. They obviously can't use privileged documents. They'll have to set those aside. They'll be reviewed by, as I understand, you know, a third party reviews them, and they set aside what's privileged and not. But this is war. I mean, I believe this shows that we're very close now to the end game. You do not go bust in with get a judge to give you a warrant to search the president's personal lawyer's office unless you think you are close to the end of this. You are getting important investment information. The president is now going to go to war against him. If the president has ever thought about trying to fire Mueller or pardon people, this is the moment where it goes to the very front of mind. I worry that we might be underinterpreting this, right, in the sense that I think this is a big move. Mueller could have put this off. He could have tried to get more cooperation from Cohen. The idea that he signs off and goes to a judge to get a judge to sign off on a warrant to do this, I think that's a big deal.
All right. And now let's hear what Trump said in the cabinet room, because
this is hilarious. What a
it's
baby.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Completely loses it.
So I just heard that they broke into the office of one of my personal attorneys. Good man. And it's a disgraceful situation. It's a total witch hunt. I've been saying it for a long time. I've wanted to keep it down. We've given, I believe, over 1 million pages worth of documents to the special counsel. They continue to just go forward. And here we are talking about Syria. We're talking about a lot of serious things with the greatest fighting force ever. And I have this witch hunt constantly going on for over 12 months now.
And actually much more than that. You could say it was right after I won the nomination it started. And it's a disgrace. It's frankly a real disgrace. It's an attack on our country in a true sense. It's an attack on what we all stand for. So when I saw this and when I heard it like you did. I said, that is really now in a whole new level of unfairness.
Unfairness.
Yeah. And which country is he talking for when he says this is against everything we stand for? Russia? And I'm pretty sure a witch hunt doesn't include, you know, a number of indictments, a number of guilty pleas, the FBI raiding your lawyer's house. I mean, come on. If this is a witch hunt, somebody's uncovered a coven. This is like the Salem witch trial, except that everybody's eating the bread and their heads are spinning backwards.
It's not a witch hunt if they plead guilty. Like, they've pled guilty. This isn't I don't think he knows what a witch hunt means.
And like it or not, Orange Agent Orange Menace, if a client is using a lawyer's services for the purpose of engaging in crime or fraud, there's no privilege, right? It can't fall under any sort of crime fraud exception. And Mueller has proven that he's pulled this off before. He persuaded a judge to apply the exception to compel testimony from Manafort's lawyer. He successfully argued that he engaged her services in order to commit fraud. So he's done it before, and he's doing it again.
Well, Bill Kristol tweeted something this morning when Trump was saying attorney-client privilege is dead in the United States as a result of this. Of course, it's ridiculous. But Kristol cited a ruling by Justice Cardozo for the court in Clark versus the United States in 1933, where Justice Cardozo wrote, "The attorney-client privilege takes flight if the relation is abused. A client who consults an attorney for advice that will serve him in the commission of a fraud will have no help from the law. He must let the truth be told."
What kind of a world are we living in, though, when Bill Kristol is like a voice of reason and sanity? This is the man. This is the man who thrusts Sarah Palin upon us, and I find myself cheering him on every day on Twitter. Like he has nailed Trump repeatedly, and same with David Frum, who actually really now is more of a Democrat than a Republican. I don't know why he just doesn't say I've switched sides. I mean, all these conservatives and Republicans who were just awful back in the early Obama years are just anti-Trump, vehemently anti-Trump, and they're smart and they're right. But you know what? You fuckers caused this.
Yeah.
Like, you caused this angry, vitriolic stuff that went on when Obama was coming up and the first couple of years of Obama, when the Tea Party was starting up. You didn't do anything to stop that. You encouraged it. You created Trump. Here he is. Great that you're tweeting out against him and hating his guts and knowing that he must be impeached or he's got to go. But maybe next time, don't start this whole ball rolling.
Yeah, but they're going to, you know what? They're only doing this right now because they're on the outs, which is fine. But it's going to be the same pile of dog crap the next time there's a Republican elected. And for the record, by the way, I think every man that has so far served as president, with the exception of a few, such as Andrew Johnson, who was actually impeached but never removed from office. You know, by and large, whether or not you like them or lump them, they are honorable men who have served, whether you agree with them or disagree with them. I really believe that they had the best interests of the country at their core. But this guy didn't. And all of these guys silently went by and did nothing. And I would not be surprised if some of the very same commentators that are out there, you know, torching Trump all the time, have been giving money to Republicans who have, you know, tacitly or publicly supported the Trump agenda, and are probably still giving money. It's a great thing to be a talking head. They get lots of money. They get lots of airtime. People buy their books, whatever the hell it might be. But, you know, when you twist yourself into a pretzel, to try and act like you're a moral authority, but you're probably taking kickbacks or giving kickbacks rather to Republican candidates who are supporting the very guy you don't like. What kind of moral authority are you?
I honestly think that Trump will cause a change in how they do politics in the United States. I do. I think that this is going to be the cautionary tale. And then that is the only silver lining. Like,
so
here's
you think this is rock bottom?
Yeah. Okay. And I think here's what happens when you push a celebrity and an asshole into a job that he was ill prepared for, and we cannot do that again. It cannot be Oprah Winfrey.
I was going to say,
as much as I like her, right? You can't.
But you know what?
You have to have
that's unfair to Oprah. I'm sorry. Not that
no,
I want
I agree,
Oprah to run, but
there's not celebrities, please. Like,
but Donald Trump is not only an asshole, but you said earlier a couple weeks ago, I think on one of our first pods, he's a stupid asshole. That's the difference.
Yes.
Right? Like,
yep, that's true.
Oprah Winfrey is not stupid. She's built herself
she
up from nothing.
No, she would have been smart enough. Yeah, and even Obama, who had very little political experience, right, was smart enough to surround himself with smart people and was smart enough to realize the things that he wasn't smart enough. Trump is so stupid that he actually thinks he's smarter than everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, he knows
that's
more than the generals, remember?
He is. Yes.
Yeah. Mike, anything to add?
Nothing. I don't want to talk about Oprah being president. It's no.
All right.
Just Nopra.
Nopra. All right. Well, before we go, so what are the odds, Leanne, on an impeachment or a resignation by Trump? Go.
Oh, God. I don't even know how to do odds. I failed at math. I'm just saying that I think he will quit within the next 18 months.
What about you, Mike?
Yeah, I think he's just going to lose the next election.
See, and I still think he's going to win. I think he's going to cling and he's going to win again because I think that country is so irretrievably broken. And last question
Come on,
I have.
Look at those kids. Look at those kids in the Women's March. That's not an irretrievably broken country. It's Americans who
That's
are out there
point.
Fighting against them harder than anybody.
Sure, but right? if those individuals are, for the most part, confined to states that already went Democratic, that's not going to be much help. 4 million.
Do you want to bet $20?
No.
Pennsylvania, sir, sure going to help, and they'll probably lose Pennsylvania.
They need Michigan. They need Wisconsin. They need Florida.
The thing is, the left is now so energized, right?
Right.
And a lot of people stayed home in the Hillary Clinton election, partly because they were kept getting told by the polls they weren't that enthusiastic voter, and the polls kept telling them that she had it in the bag. All those people are coming out. There's no way he's winning that election. But I said that last time. So don't hold me to it. Who knows? Maybe Russia will get involved and change all the votes.
Yeah.
Maybe Premier Doug Ford can go down and help him out.
Who knows? Now that we're dealing with people with foreign governments interfering in elections, like who knows how it's going to go?
Yes, God help us if the government of Fiji gets involved in our elections. What a mess. We'll all be living on islands and soaking under our palm trees. Last question for me from you guys is this. Who's your pick for 2020 in the U.S. that you would like to see on the Democratic ticket? Go.
Biden,
I would say too, but he's just too old and I worry that he wouldn't survive the term. Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, I would like a woman, thanks.
Yes, I would.
Kristen Gillibrand.
I love her. Yeah, I don't know. Kristen Gillibrand, meh. She would never sell, unfortunately. Elizabeth Warren, though, I would put a Biden-Warren ticket out there any day.
I love Elizabeth Warren as well.
Me too.
I love her.
Me too,
yeah.
But I just think she's too poor. I love her too. In my ideal dream world, it would be her, but I think she's too polarizing for people. She's like the female Bernie Sanders.
Yes, but with more
just
hair.
Just make sure it's not Bernie Sanders.
Oh, he's not even a Democrat. He's a Russian stooge. The guy's an asshole.
I really want that guy to go away.
Just go away.
I will also just say to all our U.S. listeners, because we do have quite a few of you, that if you want to take action and mobilize for the 2018 midterm elections, go to swingleft.org. That will help you to register to vote, to find your closest swing district, and to be able to help take back your country in November 2018. So that's swingleft.org. It starts with the House, getting control of the House and stopping the Trump agenda. And then hopefully, because that blue wave, if it really titles in, hopefully you'll be able to take the Senate as well. But swingleft.org, check it out. And until next week, my friends, ciao.
See ya.
Ciao, Bella.